Like the great Pavarotti, the singer, when, you know, he was a diva. He was the greatest of all divas. He was an incredible talent with a most unbelievable voice. And I've gone to concerts where he would say, no, 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 I do not feel good. I will not sing tonight. And he'd leave. See? And then I've gone to somewhere it was the most unbelievable voice that ever lived. I mean, the greatest, right? Pavarotti. But he was he liked me for whatever reason. He was very terrible to other people. To me, he was nice. He liked me. But he goes, Donald, Donald, I will not sing tonight. You don't have 1,000 people. I will not sing tonight because I do not feel... I will leave tonight. And then leave. I'd say, ladies and gentlemen, he's just canceled. But when he was great, he was great. But now I feel like him. I say, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. I'm getting... No, I don't have that. I'm not a diva.
Greetings, friends. It's Chapo. We are back. I am back. And it is less than one day before the 2020 U.S. presidential election, and we are back where it all began with me, Matt, and Felix pondering where we are once again before 0 hour. And just at the top of the show, I would like to say I have been away because, in case you hadn't heard already, my dad died last week, and I just wanted to say at the top of the show to everybody who reached out to me just by email, DM, tweet, text, everything, I just really want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. The outpouring of love was astonishing. I mean, I think actually my tweet announcing the death of my father, I think the most liked tweet I've ever done. So let's juice this one, guys. Let's send this one to the moon. Patreon in the bio. Let's keep it going with that. But genuinely though, I mean, it was just like an astonishing number of people, friends, strangers, fans of the show, former guests, people who who's never met me or him or us, or just have only know about us or our relationship or him and what he was like through his guest episode, his appearance on the show. I would like to genuinely thank all of you. If I didn't get a chance to respond to you personally, it's just because there simply were too many messages. But rest assured that I read almost every one of them, and as did my mom and sister. And genuinely, it was a huge, huge comfort to me in a moment where I was feeling only sadness. And it really did lift my spirits, and they have stayed that way ever since. So I want to thank my co-host for holding it down while I was gone. And I'll say a little something more about my dad at the end of the show. But there is business to attend to. There's an election. The fate of the free world is depending on what we say in this episode. So let's get into it. And I will say, as long as we're talking about things that were a balm to my soul in a sad time in my life, I would like to... mention at the top of the show, Felix's Halloween online Halloween costume that he did for a couple of days. I don't know how many of you noticed that, or were conned by it, or got angry at it, or stopped following him, or blocked him, or maybe even just like, I don't know, did a wellness check on him or on yourself because of how fucking bad the tweets were. Felix, it was one of the best bits.
Absolute masterclass. Tears in my eyes as he took the pitch.
I have never, I've been yelled at a lot in my online life, like dating back to when I was 11 years old, but I've never been yelled at by so many like friends and close friends as I was at this time. Like, it's one thing to get yelled at by your enemies, like you kind of want that, but I had friends, you know, telling me, please stop. I fucking hate this. I'm going to block you until this is done. This fucking sucks. And mission accomplished. Everyone hated it. So for those of you who are not on Twitter, I just decided to do everything that I hate online. I changed my picture to me making the vote face.
Is that what you're calling it? The vote
face?
Yeah,
it's the voting face.
It was just a rictus of death. It was awful. It was the man behind Winky's Diner in Mulholland Drive looking at that Avi every time I just passed out because of how fucking wretched that that twisted little grin and just it was really bad.
Brees told me he wanted to take an SLR and shove it up my cock and empty the mag into it because of it. But yeah, so I would just write like the most like annoying, like just groveling, fucking signaling like left liberal media tweets of the last 4 years. Like every, like just like, oh, Glenn Greenwald's having a normal one. But I would come up with just like the most mind-searingly awful jokes, and I would work really hard on coming up with something that would alienate the majority of my followers. And when I ran out of ideas, like when I didn't have anything elaborate planned, I would just like find a screen cap of like Max Blumenthal on Fox News and be like, we need to hold him accountable. Like when you run out of things to say, you just have to hold people accountable.
That is my favorite. That is my favorite tick, is holding people accountable on Twitter. Yeah, you're like, we got to hold Bernie accountable, y'all. And then the thread you did about disinformation and misinformation was like, okay, well, the brilliance of this bit, though, is because like, there's been so many shitty parody accounts who try to do this, like, you know, like Joe Kexgold and stuff like that, you know, like, or maybe they were funny to begin with, but they get old really fast. And like, the thing is, those bits that they're doing are all based on like hyperbole. They're all doing a kind of a grotesque exaggeration of the thing that they're making fun of, and after a while, it just gets sort of too easy and kind of hack. Felix's, your tweets were not an exaggeration at all. It was an exact copy of like of exactly the way these people think, their sense of humor, and I really appreciated like all of those exact type of person. All that, like that, so many of those like media guys like have to follow you for their job and then had to see that reflection of themselves for like at least 72 hours.
Those tweets were like a Voight-Kampff test for anyone who saw them. Because if you're a human with human blood in your veins, you see those things and you get a little nausea. You get a little pit in your stomach just thinking about the empty soul that wrote that. But if you're one of those people, you read that and you're like, oh, someone's getting epic today. They might warrant a retweet over this one. Yes, please. And that, if you can look at that and you could use that as essentially a humanity test. It's like putting the wire into the petri dish of blood in the thing, how they react to these tweets.
Your display name was Felix wants Jack Dorsey to listen to journalists, and then and then you ended the misinformation thread by suggesting that you have a family Slack channel to vet news stories, and then you say like something about like if you want to hold the people accountable, like stop evading paywalls.
I wrote one of the jokes I wrote in the first day, like actually physically hurt me to write, and I could only do it because I knew how much it would upset people. And it was like, well, it looks like the Christian right was correct. We're all goth socialists now, but it's extremely good. And I think I got like 1,000 unironic likes on that just from like lizard humans. But I do have a huge prize to show for this. I have a new follower. Some of you may know her. Her name is Anne Applebaum. These tweets were so fucking shitty that Anne Applebaum was like, oh, I need to follow this guy. I don't know who this guy is or what fucked up face he's making, but I got to see more of these. And I obviously despise her work, and I'm figuring out a way to get blocked by her without, you know, retweeting Goatsy, which is my usual go-to. That's how I've gotten people to unfollow in the past. But I'm thinking about DMing Anne Applebaum like an Instagram drug dealer. And being like, all right, perks 15, sans 10. My cart guy's unit got called up in the IDF. No cart, sorry. Hit my line. And then giving her like the YKS complaint line.
Yeah, Anne Applebaum was, in case you're not familiar, her latest book was about like, how did the right wing get so crazy? And it begins with a description of like her at like, I don't know, basically a party that was attended by, I don't know, the like everyone who was in the war room in Dr. Strangelove, or the party at Eyes Wide Shut in, I don't know, in Poland or Ukraine. And then it was just like half of the people at that party are Nazis now. What happened? These are all people who she was like, these are all people who were my friends and now they won't talk to me.
Yeah. She's a real piece of work, but she's about to get a great deal on perks.
Well, as I mentioned, guys, it's one day out from
election day.
since we it's been one day. It will be one day till we vote again.
It's one day.
One day more.
It's just one day. We have one chance. Do not miss this chance to blow. And, you know, I mean, I don't know, man. It's just like if I was sick of this fucking election and didn't care about it before my dad died, imagine how I feel about it now. I mean, like, I guess just like, okay, here we go. This was just this afternoon in Pennsylvania. Trump is on stage complaining about how celebrities don't like him and said, quote, "I could tell you some stories about Lady Gaga."
Now he's got Lady Gaga. Lady Gaga. It's not too good. I could tell you plenty of stories. I could tell you stories about Lady Gaga. I know a lot of stories about Lady Gaga. And John Bon Jovi, every time I see him, he kisses my ass. Oh,
I could tell you some stories, honey.
He's so fucking alpha.
You think that's like a real hair? Ugh.
He also said, "What's trending on Twitter is so boring. I've been trending since the day I was born."
God, that's just, I hate, he has destroyed irony and now even the concept of subtext completely. Because that's the kind of thing that you're supposed to tease out. Like, oh, the entire Trump, his entire life has been about being famous because of this howling void at the center of him that needs to be filled by other people's adulation because his dad didn't love him. And it's like, that's just so obvious and cardboard and like, you know, cod Freudian. But then he just goes out there and says, "I've been trending since the day I was born. Everyone loves me. Oh, you love me. Love me, please. Love me so much." This guy pursued single-mindedly the goal of being famous. And in so doing, he became president of the United States by accident. That is not an exaggeration of what happened.
I guess it's like, if the Biden people haven't colossally blown it, which is always a possibility.
Hey, you gotta factor that
yeah.
in.
Yep.
Yeah, knock on wood. It will be sort of the greatest beginning, middle, of end of an amazing story that, like, he was what every American liberal interventionist and center-right imperialist describes as, like, the chaos event for American empire, right? Like, you get a man in there who's of bad character and blah, blah, blah. And if he just does 4 years, the country didn't end, we didn't get taken over, and then everything just resumes its, like, its ongoing shitty steady decline, that the worst thing happened and it didn't change one way, it didn't make anything dramatically better or worse years after it's barely even a memory. That's the perfect ending, that he's just enveloped into nothingness. The Republicans will figure out a new way to make enough of whatever group white in order to retain power, as they always have. The Democrats will, like, you know, continually say that they need to do pay go for stimulus bills. Quality of life and birth rates will steadily decline. People won't be able to afford to have families. But for like a brief window, we just had this weird, like, queenie asexual guy. every week was like. General Mathis isn't a star. Like,
yeah. Like, this is in the middle of, you know, irreversible levels of climate-related catastrophes start mounting, and a global pandemic, and, like, the whole global economy starting to buckle, and just the guys in charge is like, "Oh, my God, television's so boring." there's nothing on.
The historians of the future, you know, will... I mean, like, you know, depending on what happens tomorrow, I mean, they will look back at this 4-year period of that one brief shining moment before the water wars began and America was ruled by a bisexual woman with mental health problems.
Just the last 2 days before the end of the fucking race, and he's like, "My friend Pavarotti, he'd come out."
That was so good.
Say, "Oh,
that
no, I forgot." Awesome.
That was so good.
He's freezing to death behind him.
And okay, well, Matt. Going,
"Yes, sir, sir. Yes, sir. Pavarotti, great man. I enjoy
his Pavarotti
opera style scenarios. I do not recall him ever seeing him in concert, but I recall he might have been in The Naked Gun, I think."
he called Pavarotti the greatest diva of all time.
Not me. I'm not a diva.
I'm not a diva. And no, but like the whole context of that joke,
he is the most diva who's ever diva'd.
And the context of that joke was, of course, that Pavarotti, according to Trump, would often just not show up for concerts, or he'd be in the dressing room and go, no, I cannot sing tonight. It is no good. And he was like, I wish I could do that. I don't want to be here. Fuck you, bitch.
I don't want to be, like, he's when he said, like, I shouldn't have to be here. They said you were good in Georgia. And today, did you see, this is just a few seconds before we started recording, but he tweeted out, Texas and Pennsylvania, remember Joe Biden wants to ban fracking. It's like, yeah, that's a confident campaign.
I mean,
look. Everything's going awesome. Yep.
I mean, look, it's just like, as we mentioned before, like, everyone is so gun-shy because of 2016, because, like, you know, everyone, the polls assured everyone that there's no way Donald Trump could win. And, you know, I do remember basically the day or two before the last election, I remember Virgil, Texas, in one of our DMs was just talking about all the state polls and just basically saying that they were all screaming red and that this was going to be a disaster. And I just remember thinking, nah, no, not going to happen. So again, you can't underestimate like any scenario. I would give it a 50-50 chance of anything happening at any given point in the future. But it does seem, I feel like, if you're just going from Trump himself, his campaign, the Republican Party around him, like the Republican media apparatus, it does seem like they're playing pretty tight. I mean, it seems like they are grinding their teeth to the gums right now. And it's just, I think what it comes down to is that I think it's pretty clear to everyone that in his 4 years as presidency, like, Trump has not only not widened his base of support, but, like, that's all he has, and voter suppression. So I think, like, that's basically the strategy. But, I mean, like, two court rulings out of Texas and Pennsylvania by very hardline partisan right-wing judges basically throwing out these cases to invalidate the hundreds of thousands of ballots for some spurious reason. I mean, like, they're not, it doesn't seem like at least those two judges were really willing to stop the counting of votes. Because, I mean, like, this is the thing here. Trump is basically, and the Supreme, or Kavanaugh, or, like, the Supreme Court, like, they last week came out and said that, like, invented this standard that, like, if it's not called by midnight tomorrow,
that's just from TV. That's not even from history or anything.
and to be fair, like, the media has played a large role in
fault that he could pull this out of his ass, just like, because that's what Trump thinks, because he's got no object permanence. It's like, No, I know the election night. You turn it on, and then at some point they say, when do they turn it off? That's the legal election period. And now you got to just go, yeah, that.
But
sure.
The
thing is that they'd have to do it. I think what they're doing is they're setting forward a standard whereby, yeah, if there's ever a chance where they feel like there's a real contest for power in this country that might subvert them in some significant way, they would not hesitate to use them. The question is, will they do it on behalf of Donald Trump? And I just don't think that they will. I think they got what they want out of Trump. They got the judges.
Yeah.
They're done. Now it's just they want another 4 years, like, with a huge recession that he's going to be dealing with and a continued uncontrolled pandemic that he's going to deal with. And they're just going to have to respond to his daily temper tantrums and try to justify him to a public that never really liked him anyway. And just, I mean, it wouldn't be worth it.
And I mean, I think the thing is, like, I have no doubt in my mind that, like, the judiciary, the media, and the Democratic Party would essentially allow them completely just steal. Like, if the results were clear to almost everybody that Biden had won the popular vote and then the Electoral College narrowly in maybe one state, I have no doubt that they would appoint Trump president.
Of course.
But it has to be vanishingly close for that to happen. And the thing is, like, if it came down to a recount, and what they're talking about is simply stopping the counting of votes.
Yeah.
In states where, like, you know, all these things are based on projections. Like, I mean, they're talking about, like, days of counting thousands and thousands of votes. And they're just saying that, like, no, we're just going to stop that. We're just going to, like, invalidate, like, voting. And, you know, you're right. I can see them. I have no doubt that they would do that at some point, or maybe they'll do it tomorrow. Who the fuck knows? But those two court cases, these are hard right wing fucking judges. Like, these guys are fucking monsters, and, like, even they can't bring themselves to find standing for these cases. You could tell in their rulings that they wanted to invalidate these votes, but they just couldn't find a fig leaf fucking bare enough to provide these cases standing.
And on behalf of Trump, who, as much as the base of the party is Trump, I don't think even among the people he appoints into court, that's necessarily the case too, because they are able to, I think for the most part, separate the fortunes of the party and themselves from Trump, which of course at the psychic level, the supporters can't do because it's a total like mind meld there. But they have suffered incentives as members of like an actual political elite. And I just don't think that there's been enough time for them to have been to fully absorbed ideologically Trumpism to make them overlook the fact that there's short-term self-interest here is to let Trump lose, if that's what it looks like is going to happen.
And I think particularly if you're talking about the judiciary or the Supreme Court, I mean, like if it's close enough and they can get away with it, they'll do it. But not if it's just them blatantly just invalidating the entire American legal system in the process. Because the thing is, they don't need to. They've already got it. They've got what they wanted, so it doesn't matter if a Republican is president
for
40 fucking years. It doesn't matter.
They don't need to do it. They got what they wanted. And why would you want to have why would you want to be the party in power during two coming crises that have pretty much been proven in the last 8 months cannot be dealt with given the current outlay of power within our insanely idiotic constitutional governmental structure? Like, they can't be dealt with. Do you want to be holding that fucking hot potato for the next 4 years and answering for Trump?
You're speaking about like just COVID, no end in sight there, and then the next economic crash.
Yeah,
almost certainly going to happen over the next year or so.
Yeah,
well, there you go.
There's clearly like they can't even think. Trump, the guy who has more like populist instincts than most people in the Republican Party. And of course, that was all just pandering to people to what he thought they wanted, because he cared more about that than any underlying ideology. He still couldn't get more than one check out there. He still couldn't spend enough attention not watching fucking TV or going in front of a bunch of chuds to hoot and holler and blow COVID in their face to sit down and insist on a deal getting done, which he could have done. He certainly could have done more than he did. He let them not go out. Couldn't get a second check with his name on it before the election. Doesn't want to win, which I think he doesn't want to win deep down, but in his conscious mind, he has to win. Because
no, his conscious mind cannot bear the thought of being a loser. But I think deep down, he never wanted to be president to begin with. You know?
Yes, and now he's like, any pleasure he ever got from it is gone like years ago. He wants this to be over, but he doesn't want to lose. And that's why he's in this situation.
Yeah, I mean, also, like, going back a little bit to why would they want to be left holding this flaming bag of shit? I mean, Biden is really holding a bag of shit. Should they prevail, which it looks like they will, and beyond a margin of reasonable theft that everyone would let them get away with, Biden's coalition, which is not the Obama coalition, is way older, way whiter, way formally right-leaning than the old Obama base. And even if Biden had the political will to do some of the things that he's hinted at wanting to do, I don't think he would deeply deficit spend for a necessary stimulus. I don't think he can he has the political will, or any of his people have the will or experience to unfuck up things like state unemployment funds. I feel like any ambitious program, or ambitious by Biden standards, they would feel like they would have to show their voters that it's already fully funded, because they're creatures of the 80s and 90s. And I feel like anything they would do to try to fund these programs would be broadly unpopular with the people that swept him into power, and especially the people that swept him into power in the primary. Now, if they do what some people think they're going to do, which is run Harris in 4 years, that presents its own set of problems, which is literally getting anyone to vote for her, which they did not accomplish in the primary. So they have a huge bag of shit to hold on to. And I presume Joe's clogs will fall off while stomping it out. Who knows? Who knows?
Maybe, well, here's the thing.
Yeah.
I just I don't know. I mean, like, thinking back to, you know, before year zero kicked off, and, you know, we left California, after Super Tuesday with the, you know, stench of doom and defeat all around us. I thought Trump was a shoo-in for re-election against Joe Biden. And I would think he actually still would be were it not for COVID, which was the real fucking wild card it's the one thing he couldn't completely evade responsibility for. yeah. as president of the United States. It's the one thing that just he can't lie about enough for it to go away. And that's the joke is it hasn't gone away. But, I mean, look, as long as we're considering outcomes and not avoiding mistakes of previous elections, can you imagine how fucking funny it will be if the Democrats lose this election and like
and
lose it fairly? And yeah. I think there's no way he's going to win the popular vote.
No,
there may not be a Republican president who will win a popular vote in an election. Like as long as we're alive.
Yeah,
I mean, right. But you know, if Trump wins the Electoral College, if he gets to like 271, and it's not just like I'm sure, like obviously, you know, suppression and just how generally rotten our democracy is will factor into that. But if it's like basically they win this election, can you fucking imagine how fucking like insane and funny that would be? It's almost indescribable. It's almost indescribable.
What would you even do? Like what they would do after would be so fun. Like they would like be like, all right, fuck it. Do you like this? And like make Anthony Weiner the head of the DNC. Like it would be the funniest. Like seeing Tom Perez croak onto TV and going, oh, there are some really exciting results still. You know, former like CIA drone operator Craig Fuck won in Texas in a special election that he's going to lose in 16 months. Like that would be because it's like after that, what do you even do? Nothing.
It's mind boggling, but it could definitely happen. It is not just think that this is some like fantasy scenario that we're ginning up for. I think it's unlikely. And I think. I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to find where the actual like professional gamblers are putting their money in this election, and it seems like they're going with Biden. So I mean, I think that's make of that what you will. And it's just like I don't know. I mean, it just overall, it's just like if Hillary Clinton had just won one of those fucking states that she lost on that night 4 years ago, she would be president right now. And it seems mm-hmm. very unlikely to me that Biden is going to lose any states that she won in 2016.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And then not win a single other one.
Yeah, it's like, and he's up in all of them. All of like the closest one I think is Ohio. Like I think he's going to lose Ohio, but like he's up, and you could say, oh, the polls are cucked, and of course they might very well be cucked. But he wasn't. But Hillary was not there in those polls. Election day, it was looking very, very, very thin there, and it happened so late, people basically didn't have a time to notice it.
Hillary's lead was also very fluid in that last month. It was up and down and up and down. And whenever you would point this out to people, they'd go, oh, well, she's ahead by 9 points. Yeah. And she was, you know, ahead by 2 points yesterday. And today she's under by 1 point. Like Biden, it's been like his floor has been what, like 7?
Oh, yeah. And he's, and this is a thing. Hillary never was in any of those states, even when she was up. He's consistently above 50%. Mm-hmm. And that to me, more than anything, is the real sign that the polls would have to be cucked to a degree that kind of makes the whole point. You know, you can't make that decision until something like that happens because it's so just absurd.
Another factor is, you know, like the Anthony Weiner's laptop and the Comey memo and shit, like that did hurt her. And this year coming around.
Yeah.
Tony
Babaloni and Hunter Thompson's giant hog.
Hunter Biden's cock. I didn't get a chance to talk to you about the Hunter Biden photos. And by the way, the right wing is totally right that the media has spiked that story.
Oh, yeah.
They're spiking that story because it would be unfair for Biden. That would unfairly throw the election to Biden. Because I remember reading like all like Q people and like right wingers, and they're like, I've seen the laptop photos. They're unspeakable. Hunter Biden is eating Chinese children.
Yeah, he was doing like pedophile adrenochrome shit.
He was torturing Chinese children in a hotel room. And then you see the photos, and he's just like, he's just bawling out hot MILFs who have like C-section scars. Did you guys see the photo of the woman just sucking his cock while smoking a cigarette at the same time? And then he's got his legs locked around her head from the back like a wrestling hold, and she's just burning a cig while she's topping him off. The M&Ms awesome. Lined up on his cock, dude. Like, it's just like,
did you see him fucking the girl in the worst room of all time?
Yes. So that looked like the gaming basement. He looked like he was fucking a woman in the gaming basement.
He was just railing out two chicks in on a floor mattress with the worst purple sheets ever made and 30 to 50 empty McDonald's Ritz cups.
Fuck,
like,
man.
My man.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, and when people are like, oh, he spent, like, the new thing where he spent, like, $21,000 on the, like, live Jasmine or whatever. It's like, he has $10 million.
Yeah.
It's like,
what do you think rich people do with money? Yeah. That's what money's for.
Yes.
And, like, yes. Here's the thing, though. It's like, oh, like, you know, making, oh, like, oh, you guys are making Hunter Biden into a cool guy. And, like, the thing is, though, like, yes, everything about these stories does prove that Hunter Biden, Joe Biden, Joe Biden's brother, his whole fucking family are deeply, deeply corrupt. But it's like, I can't follow this shit because it's like, I already knew that. Everyone is. And it's like, it doesn't benefit Trump because like his fucking dipshit family is the most corrupt people on earth.
It's a perfect irony. This whole thing is like Twilight Zone stuff. So when Trump was running against Hillary and he wasn't even trying to win, remember, he was just trying to pump up his profile and get more famous and maybe turn it into a string of mid-chain Trump branded hotels in like mid-sized cities across the red states, or a TV network or something. He was just going with the flow and he was seeing where Hillary had weaknesses and attacking her. And what Hillary did was play defense because she was freaking out about wanting to win and she was stiff and she was defensive. And so she would say, what about all these things that's wrong with Trump? And the problem was everyone that she was talking about, she had. Corruption? Yes. A crooked charity? Yes. Sex shit with her husband? Yes. So there was nothing that landed. And since she was essentially the incumbent, like, she had to fend off the challenge from the guy saying, hey, let's do something different. Now, with everything bad, Trump has to convince people to stick with him. And he's got Biden here. And he wants to, he's like freaking out. He wants to win. And what does he do? He goes, well, look at what's wrong with Biden. And everything he's got, Trump has.
Like, exactly.
Yeah, he has fucking crooked kids. He's fucking crook. We've already metabolized that you're a crook. So if you're both crooks, you're the crook who was in charge when everyone died of COVID. And that's the end of this fucking thing. And it gets neutralized.
You know what's funny?
All of it works like that way for Joe. Like when they say that Joe is senile and has dementia, yes. But what is Trump just mincing around singing YMCA and talking about Lady Gaga? It's like, you are too, asshole.
He is in Hillary's position.
You are incoherent.
He is Hillary now. He is Hillary. Every attack he gives on Biden to try to unseat the challenge to the status quo that's intolerable is just, but that's you, dude.
And here's the thing. It's like, just sort of like, you know, this is our last episode before election night. I'm like, just trying to sum up what, like, the final blessed, finally, home stretch of this election, like the last 2 weeks have felt like. And it has been this bizarre repetition of the last fucking election. It is all the same shit over again.
Beat for beat.
It's so boring and stupid. And it's like our friend Ev from Age of Napoleon put it best. And it was like, the last week of the election, Tony Baba Booey and fucking Miles Teller. Like, he's like, oh, I'm not anonymous anymore. Trump's a bad guy. These fucking nobodies. And like what Ev said was like, it would be like running a clip show during sweeps week. And that's what this has felt like. This election has felt like the clips week of the last fucking election.
But it has to be, because if you watch that second debate, where they had the beeper and Trump was heavily sedated and coming off that that steroid high, and they actually did get to talk things out a little bit. I was watching that thing, and they were going very contentiously, and the first 45 minutes, at no point did they actually disagree on a policy, basically. Like, everything about COVID, it was just, we're not going to shut anything down, but we are going to get rid of the virus. Like, that was it. Like, there was no, because, you know, they're both admitting, we're not going to do the thing that would give people, you know, some leeway and allow us to fight this thing, which is send everybody home and pay them to stay home. Just do that. Biden isn't saying that. Biden is still saying we need to keep the economy open, which means all he's doing is going to add some filigree to Trump's thing. There's no disagreement. There is no real argument. And then there's the stimulus. What is it going to be? Well, we're going to give some money to people and we're going to do some test and trace shit. It's all just the same amorphous thing. There's no actual difference. They're both governing as a neoliberal button pusher would, because at this point they're just the mere expression of those impulses.
I will say, though, The one thing over the last week or so that has been quite special to me and unique to this election is the phenomenon of the Trump campaign stranding tens of thousands of his supporters in either like bitter cold or like oppressive heat. Because like I don't know what it is.
Leave Flesh's subtext alone. What did subtext ever do to you?
And I think it's just, it's like the first one, the one in Nebraska. And like that night we were following this account that was like the Omaha, Nebraska police scanner. And it was fucking insane. It was so fucking nuts. It was thousands of people like suffering like hypothermia, falling down in snowdrifts, trying to get back to their car. Because like they did this whole thing where it was like they bussed thousands of people from the parking lot, like 3 or 4 miles away to the, you know, to the cattle corral where they all shoved them in, and then provided no plans for buses to take them back to their cars. And it's already ludicrous that they're stuffing all these people into buses to begin with in the middle of COVID. I mean, I've got a story. I mean, this isn't The Hill, so take it with a grain of salt. But 18 Trump rallies have led to 30,000 COVID-19 cases, Stanford University study says. 30,000 COVID cases and at least 700 deaths. It's like a Stephen King book. I mean, it's too much.
It writes itself, and that's annoying. It's like people want to write. Give people a chance to write, and you can't do it because it's like, hey, how about they just leave people because they didn't want to fucking pay for buses, or the card was declined, which apparently happened.
And yeah, while
that was happening, that all the people at the rally were convinced it was a deep state plot to cancel their buses. Just a perfect encapsulation of the entire fucking base. Just these fucking rubes who have hypnotized themselves into believing that because Trump is like the most obnoxious asshole on earth, and they are too, that they're like in some way psychically identical. Is that at the end of the day, what that means is that since you don't care about anybody, neither does he, which means he'll leave your ass in the fucking woods, dude. You're on your own.
It's like, like you said, Matt, it's just no subtext. It is just the one-to-one perfect, like play. It's like if you staged a play about a president who has allowed hundreds of thousands of people to die because he just doesn't give a fuck about human life, including the people who like him and probably them least of all.
Oh, of course.
And then you wanted to stage some sort of experimental theater or performance art to literally rehearse that exact same phenomenon. It is him abandoning thousands of people in snowdrifts in Nebraska because they wanted to come out and see him and cheer for him. And it's just, he really hates his own fans more than anyone else in the country, like more than any motivated Democratic, like liberal voter. Like he hates MAGA people worse than them.
Yep, absolute swine. Look at you. You guys love your guns, don't you? Oh, pew, pew, bang. And you love the Bible, don't you love it? I'd say people say I'm the famous person, most famous this is the rest of the world. But no, there's one more person who's more famous. Jesus Christ.
That was so good. That was so
just
good.
Just with a shit eating grin on his face, like, yeah, you like that, don't you?
And then like he points up, he looks upstairs and he's like, I'm talking to you, big guy.
At the end of the day, Trump knows he's getting something over on people by getting them to pay attention to him. And so if you fall for it, you're a fucking rube.
Yeah, how could you not have like utter contempt for the people you get over on so easily? But as long as you're talking about fucking rubes who just cannot fucking buy a clue if it's blinking right in front of their face, you know, the Democratic base is just maybe even more rubified at this point. And maybe,
oh, God,
not
absolutely.
Not the Democratic base, but like the progressive liberal, like media shithead, like fucking,
oh, yes,
all these people who have backed themselves into some fucking argument about why, like, oh, I'm voting for Joe Biden because, you know, like some conceivable theory about how it redounds to the benefit of the left in this country. You're an even bigger rube than those people in Nebraska.
You gotta show Biden that we're gonna push him left or some shit. He needs you, so then he'll owe you something. No, there's nothing here. It'll be Obama all over again. Because if you win, you either weren't needed, or you weren't able to stop them. So who gives a shit? Because there's no organized left. It's just a bunch of individual voters, and then people in the media who vaguely speak for them. But there's no coordination of activity. There's no self-consciousness of it. So it cannot apply pressure.
And I also just like this idea that like scolding non-voters or people who say like, fucking, I'm not waiting 9 hours in line to fucking, I'm not going to put my life on the line for Joe Biden. Are you fucking kidding me? Like, because nothing's going to change. Who gives a fuck? And then like those people will always be hectored by some smug asshole who's just like, pretty easy for you to say, you're that's privilege. You're a marginalized person. Your life won't suffer. How could you possibly say things are going to stay the same? And it's just like, well, okay, they believe that because that's what Joe Biden says every time he gets a fucking chance to explain himself. And also this whole idea that like, it's also being incredibly condescending to these marginalized people that they claim to speak on behalf for, that they're like, I'm voting for them. Well, it's just like, well, if those people believed as you do, they would vote themselves. So how about you just vote for your own fucking reasons and don't use other people as some sort of fucking moral shield for your own what you're going to do anyway. And don't use it as a cudgel to fucking hit other people because they don't feel the same way.
Yes. Stop it. Leave them alone. People are just trying to grill, for God's sakes.
Also, it's not fun to vote.
I disagree. I like doing it. I did it at the Barclays Center this year.
Not fun.
Yeah, I was breeze in. You get the form. You get to fill it out with bubbles. I get to write in names, which is fun. I voted for Hillary, finally. It took me 4 years, but I'm finally ready for her. And then my favorite part, you put it in the machine, and it goes... And then the little click goes beep, and then you get a little sticker. I do it even if I'm just writing in my friends' names, which I do sometimes. I just like the experience.
Well, that's pretty cute to do.
The civic ritual of it, I enjoy.
Pretty cute to write in your friends' names, to be honest.
Well, yeah, actually, I enjoyed voting in New York City a lot more before they had like the bubble where you fill it out.
Yeah, I missed out on the machine. I wanted machine.
It used to be like there was like a little shower stall, and you'd pull the curtain over, and it was this like very archaic like punch card machine where you would punch in your vote, and you would lock it in, and then you would pull a big lever that would punch in the ballot and like lock it into the security box or whatever. But there was this big red lever that you would push, and then you would pull the big red lever, and that was very fun. It was like an elevator or a train, or you know, you people, our listeners love those things. So that's
you love those guys. Got your choo choo.
You love it.
You love the little choo choo. You love to get on the train.
Well, so yeah, I mean, who knows what's going to happen tomorrow, but I want it to be over. Like, that's the thing. Like, my nightmare scenario is one where it gets dragged out for like weeks and months.
I don't think that's going to happen, although it's obviously on the board as a live possibility.
Yeah, that's always possible, but I, from what I can tell, I feel like it's going to be pretty resounding. The last few months of the Trump presidency could be the funniest thing that will have ever happened.
A lame duck Trump presidency.
Oh God,
would be,
that's going to be awesome.
So
awesome.
Fucking good.
I really think that a lot of people who think that Trump has a real chance here, or think he's going to win, or think that people are being either deluded or Pollyannish if they really want Biden to win, and they can't accept reality or some other lib obfuscation. I honestly think there is driven there, obviously, one, the fact that 2016 scrambled everybody's brains, but also two, I think. It's this sense that Biden deserves to lose, and that therefore, and that he should lose to punish the Democratic Party for its fecklessness, and that therefore he will, and that his inability to do anything other than repeat the Hillary campaign with a different gloss should not be allowed to succeed. There's sort of like a submitting an ought for an is at the heart of it. And I got to say, it's wrong for Biden to win. It's monstrous for this cadaver to take this spot in this moment in history. It's a profanement of the very concept of American democracy. But that doesn't stop this shit from happening. And the reality of having President of the United States, who was never that popular to begin with, and one running against the single worst person in American political history to run for a major party spot, the only person who could have lost to him, and presiding over a massive calamity of public health and the economy. Just that doesn't happen.
The simple fact that Biden and the Democratic Party so richly deserve to lose this election is good enough evidence for me that they will have a good chance of winning it.
Honestly, that's the thing. It's like all your thoughts about the Democratic Party, because, you know, most people have become disillusioned over years with the Democrats. And so they always, even if they hated the Democrats, they have a naive sympathy for and preference for the Democrats winning over a Republican. You know, it might even be more cultural than political. And so what that means is that then when the Democrats lose, they're sad in a way because they wanted the Democrats to lose even though they hate them. And I think 2016, for a lot of people, galvanized them to a point where they hate the Democrats more than they hate the Republicans. And so they will be a little sad if Trump loses. And the thing is, you're supposed to be sad at every electoral outcome. Sad is the correct electoral outcome. So if you find yourself at sad, then you're right. So guess what? If you believe that like the Democratic Party has to be destroyed in an accelerationist, you know, catastrophic collision with Trumpism as this immovable object that like splits it open, if you believe that and you think that's the way forward, well, good news. Nothing has ever been right. You've never been correct. We've only ever failed. America's only ever slidden further towards catastrophe. And guess what? You don't get that either. You get Joe Biden sliding in there because people remember him from Obama, and he doesn't have like the taint of Hillary Clinton, and he wasn't defined by Donald Trump, and people just kind of want to turn off politics for a little bit and watch the damn game. And those are political realities that destroy any of your conception about what should happen, having any reflection on what will.
I've taken on sort of the gravity of a certain existential cast of mind over the last week, as you might imagine. And I still, like, the way I look at it is that, like, no matter what the outcome is on Tuesday, the end result will be stupid and evil.
Oh,
but
yes.
But it will also be funny.
Oh, yes.
So we'll be here. But I mean, once again, that being said, I simply have to say it again. I almost cannot comprehend how insane this country is going to go if Donald Trump wins tomorrow.
Oh, it's going to be something.
It's almost incomprehensible. Like just
people
how
have raised the stakes, raised the emotional stakes. And I honestly think this is one of the big reasons people are going to vote for Biden in the suburbs, especially. The emotional stakes of Trump being president are now so high that if we basically cannot psychically conceive of him becoming president, and yeah, we would adapt to it, but it would like turn everybody an extra crank overtuned. We're going to be vibrating. We're going to be humming if that happens. And I think subconsciously or consciously, a lot of people are going to vote to just turn it down and like bring down the frequency so that you're not vibrating so hard. You're cracking your fucking the pavement under your feet.
You know, it'd be a funny outcome, though, if Trump won re-election, or even if he loses, if he expands his share of the African-American and Latino vote this time around. As some,
well, anti-racism training works.
Yeah. I mean, yep. There was a Bloomberg article the other day about how a lot of Biden advisors are feeling pretty fucking nervous right now about the Latino vote in this country, or like based on early voting, which again, I mean, hard to read into. Like, it's, you know, who votes early and who doesn't, but that would torque up people's insanity. Like, it would just the cognitive dissonance there would really break people even further than they are now. And by that, I mean, like, people are already completely broken.
So everyone's completely insane.
That's why it's hard to imagine it getting any crazier.
Right. Exactly.
And who knows?
We consciously or subconsciously are going to steer away from that if we feel like we have an alternative. And as long as we've got Mountain Dew Code Red coming out of the taps in this country, as tenuous as it's all being held together, it's still there, I think. There's too much comfort to sacrifice for people to decide to just say, fuck it.
And
pull
by the way,
pin.
And here's the other thing. Like, you know, we talked about how certainly during the Democratic primary, the Democrats have absolutely tossed like the Me Too movement into the fucking trash can.
Bye-bye.
And if they can safely cruise to this election with suburban white people back on their side, Black Lives Matter is the next one to go overboard.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they already did that basically in the last few months. They've when there was the uprising in Philadelphia, Biden was immediately out to denounce looting and rioting. And it's like, you know, that's probably smart electorally, I gotta say. I mean, people say, oh, you're gonna depress the leftist turnout. I mean, considering the coalition they seem to be assembling right now, it's like he's made his choice, you know.
Yeah,
there's no point in like swerving now to try to pick up some college kids when you have been this successful at making inroads into like the more moneyed like suburban white upper middle class. You're playing there well in these key suburbs. It keeps working. They're going to keep doing that. And so if that kind of police violence, that cycle of violence and uprising and reprisal continues, and there's no reason to believe it'll stop. I mean, it really started under Obama. then yes, they'll absolutely have to slowly whittle away at Black Lives Matter as a concept.
Well, that is one thing I've been looking forward to see during the Biden administration. All the media bloodbath that is going to happen to specialized online publications that have become Democratic Party auxiliaries.
Ooh.
They are not going to need them anymore. There is a lot of things that the Democrats are not going to need with the new Biden coalition if it really is as old as white as we think it is. Maybe they'll call you back up for a freelance job if, you know, Kamala Harris actually does run. And in that case, no one's going to want you after because you're probably going to have been a stenographer for a fucking loser, a really bad loser.
I think that people have talked about how they fear or anticipate that if Biden gets in there, you know, presides over a hunger chancellorship, which we're all assuming is going to be some version of that, that we will emerge this like right wing economic populist sort of coherent Trumpist ideology that's going to come into a party. And I really think that that comes mostly from people just seeing TVs and watching narratives form at like the intellectual level that we know for a fact don't necessarily connect to regular people. Like all the stuff about, you know, Tucker Carlson. It's like, I think that's a trend. But if you look at these polling, if the polling data comes back showing that you're seeing a depolarization on race among like Latino and Black men or whatever, then you're really going towards a point where there might be a polarization and a realignment, but it'll be between a party of college-educated Americans and a non-college-educated Americans of all races, and that'll be and there will be no, and it will not be about economics, because economics will be off the table completely as an issue, because we went through this crisis, gave everybody one check, and said, no, you're on your own. It's catch as catch can. There's no more real government intervention to be had. So what there is we can fight over the scraps and blame each other, and whose team you're on, whose grievances you're going to accept is going to depend on whether you went through the like middle class bourgeoisification of your mores that happens when you go to college. And then the political battle will be just at the level of culture war fought between college educated and non-college educated people over yes. the age of 50. And everyone else will have been wrung out of the system because they would have seen the pointlessness of engaging with it, and their turnout numbers will dwindle.
Yes, and every time we're going to see a bunch of articles after this, you know, how is the Republican Party going to rebuild? Like, we didn't read the exact same fucking things after Obama. They always find a way, and the way that they always find a way is they decide to make a certain number of people, a slice of them, white. That's always what they've done. That's always what they will do, and they will always succeed at that.
Yeah, and one of the way they're going to do it, I think, is by evoking a civic nationalism that like is racialized to an extent, but it's not like specifically racial. The people doing like one drop racism nowadays are exclusively people on the left. That's where people care about like your 23andMe to determine your standing to speak in the progressive stack. Like the whole Republican thing is, you know, it's colorblind. Now, of course, in practice it isn't, but it's able to assimilate new types of people. It's the left that is trying to divide everybody into like ethnic cantons. Well, and that is going to have its appeal to people, especially if people see themselves more as American or male and associate like the values of like a Republican Party that is organized around like nationalist aggressive concepts and like hierarchical social relationships that reinforce like a patriarchy that is revolved around like ritualized violence. They're going to go for it because that's how people end up in this fucking country. If you're not civilized by ascension to a more feminized public space through intervention with things like fucking higher education.
Well, okay. Along those lines, Matt, I think it's a good time to segue to away from our shores to something I want to talk about. Because, you know, like I said, tomorrow's the election. It all seems fucking miserable. But I think it is good to remind ourselves that there are still a few major world democracies whose government, culture, and just national character are infinitely more miserable, doomed, and stupid than ours. And I'm talking, of course, about England.
It's a bloody shambles, mate.
And what the Labour Party just did to Jeremy Corbyn which is, I guess, expel him from the party for refusing to agree with their fucking hatchet job fucking report on labor anti-Semitism. I mean, I don't know. Not much more to say about this. I mean, this is kind of like we've imposed on ourselves a fucking a ban on talking about England ever since that election because, you know, they're doomed.
More no, depressing. No, yeah, thank no, you.
Nah, well, I mean, that's all. There's no point in it. Like, I mean, there's no hope for them, and they largely deserve whatever happens to them. But I mean, it's just this Corbyn anti-Semitism thing, and some of the shit I've had to read over the past week from these fucking whiners. Who just are all without any fucking sense, without an ounce of shame, are all pretending that like Corbyn was going to do Shoah part two if he had fucking won that election is just so fucking nauseating. And it's just like, you cannot, we said it before, I'll say it again, you cannot give these people a fucking inch. And guess what? And Corbyn kind of did give them an inch.
Corbyn's greatest sin was weakness. These people, I wish they'd taken the track to just telling them to fuck off. If we learned anything from Donald Trump, go vote Lib Dem. You probably fucking did in 2019 anyway. The Ramoners and the Zionists, they made their fucking call.
And I just, I love this idea that like, there's so many people now who call themselves, and a lot of them are, I mean, I'm seeing most of it now. I mean, there's a lot of it in America, but I'm just seeing recently in England, all these people who like say that they're leftists and say that they're pro-Palestinian Zionists. And it's just like, to Matt, the point you were making about like just sort of dividing everyone up into these cantons and setting them against each other, it's this idea that like Zionism is a political project. It's a government, and like it's like a real thing that exists in the world that people live under and deal with. And like, you can talk about it in those terms, or you can talk about it in the sense that it's an identity. That it's a vague feeling. Right. It's a vague feeling that I have, and to criticize it, and also to criticize me, if you're Jewish, is like you can't do that. That's out of bounds, and it's anti-Semitic to like make fun of me or question this idea that like I literally feel that like I fear for my life because of Jeremy Corbyn.
Keep in mind, someone whose identity in a Western democracy, who is trying to talk to you from the left as a Zionist, as a pro-Palestinian Zionist. Their identity isn't that they think Jews should have a homeland. They think that the country that you both live in, that you have probably both lived in your entire lives, most of your family lives there, you vote there, you work there, you pay taxes there, that it should have some special involvement maintaining and aiding that state. It's not that it should just exist. It's that you must be intimately involved in funding and furthering the goals of this one fucking country who does nothing to affect your quality of life, except for probably making it worse, except for probably helping elect shittier politicians, for helping poison the issues on certain matters.
And Felix, I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but there's been a move like a lot of these like Hasbarist accounts have done recently, where if you talk about Zionism if you talk about Zionism as a political project that is about building an ethno state at the expense of, you know, the millions of displaced people or the people living under military occupation, they'll immediately bring up the Uyghurs in China, and they're like, oh, I see you haven't tweeted anything about the Uyghur concentration camps in China. And it's like, okay.
My taxes don't go to that cocksucker. Yeah,
well, and it's also like, you do realize that in this analogy, you're comparing yourself to the people putting other human beings in concentration camps. And you're just like, oh, well, we're doing it less than they are.
Yeah, we don't have a Chinese American Political Action Committee where all my senators and all my representatives go and pledge fealty to China. I don't have, the governor of my state doesn't visit fucking Xinjiang province every fucking financial quarter. What the fuck are you talking about?
There isn't
yes,
a
of
law.
Of course, there's other atrocities that go on in the world. But this one, my country's intimately involved. The fucking the lieutenant governor for Illinois, the candidate for lieutenant governor of Illinois, the state in the dead center of the fucking country, does not border any oceans. They said he could not be lieutenant governor because of his stance on BDS. He did not say, I want to nuke Tel Aviv. He said, I think it shouldn't be against the law to boycott this nation. And you got fucking rid of him. Carlos Rosa and his Warren Cuck gubernatorial candidate threw him under the bus anyway. But What point one thing like that ever fucking happening with China in America? It doesn't happen.
Felix, they just passed a law in Texas requiring state employees to take an oath to the Chinese Communist Party.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but I just love it. It's like they're way out of this moral bind that they find themselves in. Because they say like, oh, if you criticize Zionism in any way, that's anti-Semitism and it's attacking me as a Jewish person. It's making Jewish people unsafe. They just say, well, why don't you care about what China's doing? And it's just like you're admitting that you're doing it too. Like, if that's your way out of this, that's your fucking get out of jail free card.
And this standpoint theory horseshit that you have to listen to everyone who says they feel unsafe. All right, let's have a fucking roundtable with Cuban emigres in Miami. I'm sure you'll love what they have to say.
Yeah,
but you have to listen to them because they feel unsafe.
And well, also,
that's,
and like
that's part of the campaign. Like it was a calumny on him, and because it's a calumny, and that means there's no real evidence There's no indication in his actual life of any anti-Semitism. It's absurd to even think of it, especially considering the party he's running against.
The fucking Tories!
Old pedophilic anti-Semites. And so you have to have a grievance. You have to have a harm. And since there's nothing visible, it becomes the feelings of people, which cannot be invalidated by definition. How could I prove that you don't feel unsafe? That you're lying about that? I can't do it. And since you're an oppressed group, you are higher than me in the progressive stack. You can't challenge that that expression of lived experience without proving that you are actually anti-Semitic for asking.
And England is the future of America. They have it both ways. If you are a Tory-leaning Jewish person, you get all the identity politics in the world. You constantly get to talk about feeling unsafe, your voice not being heard, being run over in the progressive stack in the Labor Party. If you're a Muslim, fuck you. Put your fucking face against the wall. Be thankful that you don't die while we're deporting you.
Yep.
And those Tories that were just shivering a few seconds ago, they will be eating whatever pedophilic snack that they eat in that country while watching you be deported. They have both things, which we are going to have very soon.
Well, I mean, like what they have is like what they have achieved in England is a way to permanently shut the left out of the democratic power process. And they've done it. And they've done it in like just about like, yeah, through this calumny of a man who I'm sorry, is just about the most decent person to hold any major office in Western politics in my entire life.
Corbyn's biggest gaffe, his biggest Joe Biden gaffe in English politics was not being a pedophile himself.
Yep. How are we supposed to trust him if he's not going to the Nazi parties?
and it's just like to the extent that I couldn't help myself from engaging with these fucking people who are just whining about, they're like, you don't understand how afraid I've been the last 5 years. And that, like, we're going to take years to create Jewish spaces in England where we can feel safe again. And in America, the anti-Semitism I've seen is so unspeakably evil. And what I just want to say to these people is just, well, now you've got the lad Boris taking care of you. Enjoy. He's going to guide you through these very troubled times. He's such a big fan of the Jewish people. Him, Jacob Rees-Mogg, and fucking Boris Johnson. Raise a fucking pint to them. You got what you wanted. Scotland, Wales, dude, now's your chance.
Manchester and Liverpool, actually, yeah.
The North should become its own fucking state. Ireland, by God, is that Sinn Féin's music? I think we could very well see a fucking United Ireland. It's not too far in the distant future. That is a very real possibility. And then, you know, Corbyn, dude, move to America, man. Dude, come here and run. Just try to be an American politician.
Jeremy Corbyn... here's what I will do for you if you move to America and attempt to become like the senator from New York or California. I will run the most anti-Semitic campaign you have ever seen in the primary, and you will get huge points for denouncing me. I will do Operation Mockingbird for you. You've earned it,
buddy.
You're
going to suck up all the anti-Semitic energy. There won't be any left to throw at him.
You should see some of the ads I'm working on.
Well, there you have it. Before I close out the show today, we should mention tomorrow night you will be spending election night with your boys broadcasting live from the Chapo office. I think this will probably be the first time we've all been in the same room together for like a long fucking time. Oh, I'm really looking
forward. Yeah, it has. Since like March, right?
I'm
like coming back from tour.
Yeah.
Yeah. Spend election night with us on Twitch. We're going to be live streaming all election night long. We've got a pretty killer. We got a killer lineup of guests coming at you. We've got a bottle of just 151 rum that we're just going to give to Matt and just see what happens. Matt, we're losing viewers. That's what people want to see.
Yeah, vibe yourself and everyone you know.
We'll be loving ourselves and everyone we know tomorrow night on Twitch. Please come hang out.
If there's a terrible outburst, it will be me, not Matt.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, I'm geared up for it. Yeah, I might have to play CSGO on the computer during the results. I don't know. Luckily, we have a computer there.
Yeah, we can game actually now. We finally got the monitor set up.
You guys want to play CSGO?
Let's do
it. Yeah, actually, that'd be fun. That'd be fun. I've never played it. It's like really hard, right?
It's very difficult. I ran into some very mean young men last night.
Oh, no.
It wasn't my fault that we lost the game. But.
So anyway, Chapo, election night on Twitch. Killer lineup of guests soon to be confirmed. We'll confirm the details for you tomorrow, but it'll be starting 7 p.m. Eastern and then going till Christ knows how late.
Question mark, baby.
Yeah, we're gonna be partying all night long on Twitch. If you'd like to, just come to hell with us. Don't be afraid to let your body die. Don't be afraid. Just
join
just
us. Come it's to, bliss.
Join us. And then finally, before I sign off. For this episode, I would like to return to my father and just a few thoughts that I'd like to share with you guys. A lot of the comments that I receive from fans of the show and from listeners of the show reference the episode that he was on and spoke of what they perceived as like a uniquely close and special relationship that I had with him. And, I'm glad that came across in the episode because we were very close and I miss him terribly. And I really have to say that if you're listening to this right now, if you find anything that I've done on this show or any success that I've had with this show, because you think I'm funny, you like my writing, you like my personality, it is almost entirely due to him. It is because of him. And I just feel like, what I said, and we know in my tweet announcing his death was that I am him and he is me in so many ways. And it's something that I've come to realize and like really understand in a way that I hadn't for most of my life. And a lot of it happened over the last 10 years or so. Beat the final boss of growing up. And that means like feeling that like I have achieved adulthood, that I've like defeated my parents in some way. And I thought, and for a long time, I never thought that was going to occur. But then when I did, it took me a while to realize it. But with my dad, I realized that, you go through your life, it's your father starts out as this sort of almost like a godlike figure, the patriarch. Then he's your father. Then he's your dad. Then maybe he's your old man during, your teenage years when you resent him. But what I really realized is that eventually he just became my friend. And a very, very close one. And that was the thing that hurts the most is the loss of my friend. And I miss him terribly, and I will feel that acutely in the days and years to follow without him. But I don't feel depressed. I don't feel bereft. I don't feel destroyed by grief, because considering the magnitude of such a loss, even in spite of that, I don't feel destroyed by it. In fact, I feel happy in a way. I feel just so incredibly lucky that he was my dad, and that I got to spend so much time with him, especially during the end, through much of this summer and fall. And it is his memory, and it is my life really that is his, and that is what fills me with happiness and with love. And I've felt so much love over the past couple weeks. And despite the fact that it really does feel like a large part of my heart is gone, at the same time, I feel like my heart has grown immensely, especially over the last week and in dealing with the losing him. So I just want to say thank you again to my co-hosts for being there for me, and for all the fans and listeners of the show who shared their very kind words and love with me and my family over the last couple days. I love you, Dad, and I'll always miss you. That's it. That's all I wanted to say. Oh, and oh, wait, actually, one more thing. I found out about it in January, and I found out about it about an hour before we went on stage to 800 people to kick off our fucking primary store in Iowa City. If you go back and listen to that live episode, you can probably hear it in my voice, but more than anything, I'd just like to say, over the last year, if I've been rude to you, haven't responded to an email, or just been a dick, this is the reason why, and you can't get mad at me. Nor can anyone get mad at me in the year to come, because I am dealing with the loss of my father. So keep that in mind next time you reply to me.
Through the valleys of this life,
what have you made of all this?
I don't get half the reference. on the one hand, I don't get half the references and the jargon and the accents. On the other hand, I don't understand the other half either.
Oh, what a
stupid fucking show. This is such a stupid show. Lord, I